Hello and welcome. I am your host, Kirsty, and this is Leadership Odysseys. We're embarking on a mission to bridge the gap between aspiration and reality, offering a raw and unfiltered exploration of the behind-the-scenes challenges that shape true leadership. Join us as we share stories of resilience, turning points, and authentic human experiences that remind us greatness is a product of the entire odyssey, not just the destination. Today, we have the distinct privilege of welcoming a true powerhouse in the realm of personal and professional development, Terry Hawkins. Terry Hawkins is not just a speaker, education architect, and an author. She is a force of nature, a beacon of inspiration, and a catalyst for transformation. With over three decades of experience in the arena of human performance, Terry has carved out a remarkable legacy as one of the most influential figures in the industry. From her humble beginnings growing up in suburban Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, Terry's journey has been marked by resilience, determination, and an unwavering commitment to excellence. Despite facing numerous challenges throughout her life, Terry's innate drive to succeed has propelled her to become a leading authority in leadership development, sales dynamics, and mindset mastery. From taking the plunge at 27 to start her own business, where she became the founder of People in Progress Global, to the evolution of creating Ignite Humans, Terry has touched the lives of hundreds of thousands of individuals across diverse industries, imparting impactful systems and processes and invaluable wisdom. Her ability to connect with audiences on a profound level, coupled with her infectious energy and unique sense of humour, has earned her a reputation as one of the most sought-after speakers worldwide. But Terry's impact extends far beyond the stage. As a best-selling author, she has penned several transformative books for both adults and children, including There Are Only Two Now and Too Late, and Why Wait to Be Great? It's Either Now or Too Late, inspiring readers to embrace change, overcome obstacles, and achieve greatness in every aspect of their lives. In addition to her stellar career as a speaker and author, Terry is also a visionary entrepreneur and the driving force behind Ignite Humans. As an e-learning and performance software company revolutionizing the way organizations approach the ongoing development of their teams. Throughout her career, Terry Hawkins has remained steadfast in her mission to make a positive difference in the world, touching hearts, igniting minds, and empowering countless individuals to live with purpose, passion, and integrity. So join us as we embark on a journey into the extraordinary life and leadership philosophy of Terry Hawkins, a true trailblazer and positive force of nature in the world of personal and professional development. Welcome, Terry, to Leadership Odysseys.
Well, thanks, Kirsty. I think you're going to be my new PR agent.
It's just so good to stop and reflect. And I love doing my own little bit of research on everyone. And I know you have watched your journey for a very long time. So you honestly have had such a remarkable career.
Thank you. And look, honestly, when listening to that, it's you stop and think, is that really me? You know,
it's your odyssey, and look how incredible it's been and how many people you've touched along the way. But I'm very honored to be sitting here face to face, because I'm normally on a call with you over in the US, and it was far too long between phone calls, and it was great to catch up a few months ago, but definitely have known you for a very long time. But today I'm very, very eager to dive deep into your story.
Well, I'm honored to be with you, because you know how much I love you.
Oh, well, love you very much too. And here we go. So Terry, your journey in personal and professional development has really been quite remarkable. So can you take us back to the beginning and share with us, who is Terry Hawkins and what inspired you to embark on this path of empowering others? Where did your journey really begin?
Wow. You know what's funny? I love the serendipity of life. Where did I begin? I was having a coffee with another dear friend. You and I were just talking about this before, and the relationships that we meet through our journey and our career. And Christy was the HR director for the Board Writers Group. And we met there when I did a lot of work with Billabong and so forth. And we're just having a coffee. And she said, tell me about, I forget how we got onto the subject, but I started talking about the ACE test. And we were talking about my childhood and, you know, just the struggles that I've gone through and even just recent times. And she was mentioning how resilient I was. And I said, well, I don't know if I'm resilient. I just don't think I know any other way but to just keep getting up and keep going forward. And, of course, I have my two beautiful boys and they're the ones that drive me. But I think I worked out what my trigger was for doing what I do. So years ago, anyway, so there's a test called ACE, and I think it's something to do with adult childhood trauma or something like that. There's 10 questions. It's called the ACE test. I can't remember what the ACE stands for now. And there's 10 questions, yes or no, about childhood trauma. And, you know, outside of, I mean, the trauma that could, and I hate that word trauma because I think we use it too loosely, but outside of the things that happened to you, I mean, I also had like, I was covered in warts for years and thought I was really ugly and all these other things. But there are 10 questions. Out of the 10 questions, I answered yes to 9 of them. I would have got 10, but the 10th one was, you know, did you have a family member that went to prison? And my brother went to prison, but he went to prison because he went AWOL. And I didn't think that was, you know, he didn't go to prison because it was army prison. You know, he didn't do anything illegal. So 9 out of 10. So there's something like 0.05% of people that have 9 out of 10. And so I had to do it 3 or 4 times because I couldn't quite believe that it was right. You know, it just didn't make sense. So the more that I read the, you know, researched it, because I'm really a researcher at heart, it was saying that, you know, the majority of people end up with diabetes, you know, addictions, they die very early, all of this stuff. And I was like, well, that's not me. But what was interesting was there was part of the article that said the best thing that can happen for anyone with this background is to be loved deeply by at least 1 or 2 people. And I knew the 2 people, my grade 3 teacher, Miss Browning, who just loved me for some reason. You know, I was the poor, you can see poor, you can smell poor, you can, you know, poor has a real, there's a real judgment on poverty, you know, but she loved me anyway, even with all the warts, the whole thing. And then when I was about probably 10, the Baptist church had come to town and they'd come around doing the door knock, you know, to get people to come. And I think my mother just wanted to get rid of me on Sundays. So she said to this elderly couple, look, just take Terry.
She needed some downtime.
I don't, like with 6 kids, it's like, just take one of them for goodness sakes. I was going to say for God's sake, but you know. Anyway, so this elderly couple ended up, I would catch the train on Saturday afternoons to Bethania, which was the next train stop up from Beenleigh where I grew up. And they would pick me up. I'd stay the night at their place. They had no children. And I would then go to church with them the next morning and then they would drop me home. They loved me with every inch of their being, that elderly couple. And I think that being loved deeply, like we go back into our past or into our journeys and things that have gone, happened to us, and we can go the whole why me or whatever it might be. But that love, I truly think, and this is what Christy gave me the epiphany of, was I really believe that love that I felt, I wanted other people to have that love, that feeling, even if it was just 15 minutes standing in front of a customer, that it is possible to have that really deep, heartfelt, powerful connection that changes you at a cellular level. So anyway, that's a very long-winded answer, but I just felt really lucky that she brought that to my attention.
Well, that reflection of really diving into your foundational years, but also that unconditional love is what that sounds like. There's that sitting in there, that there is no judgment, there's no perception. They are generally giving to you for the person that you are. And
yeah,
that
beautiful
feeling you're wanting to pass on to others so that they have that sense. It's a sense of belonging.
Well, because everybody, like I truly believe in the human spirit. I truly believe that everybody wants to bring their best self. You know, but we have moments, or we have a lack of education, or we have a lack of understanding, or we're ignorant. You know, when they say ignorance is bliss, it truly is, because then when you wake up and you understand, you think back to what you've done in the past and you go, oh, I can't believe I did that. You know, like people will say, I met someone who knows you, and I always go, how long ago? Do I need to apologise?
Which Terry are they meeting?
Exactly.
Oh, so that was a real big reflective moment for you. So did that, I suppose for you, so you grew up in Queensland.
Yep.
And
Queensland girl.
You then started your career very early on, finishing school. Was it straight? It was straight into retail.
Well, I had a couple of jobs and then I, because I couldn't, you know, my father died at 15, so I ended up raising my younger brother and sister. My school results suffered slightly. I also, and I don't know whether it's self-esteem, I don't know if that's the best phrase, but whenever I see really successful people, I see people who come from very loving family. And then if you put on top of that, who teach them financial literacy, then you will usually end up with a successful person because they know how to be around money, they know how to be around love. And I didn't have either of those. So my beautiful mother, she got me a job at the YMCA. So I got an internship there and that got me into college. And then 6 months into college, I just, it wasn't me. Still to this day, I'm not really into the establishment. So I do my own research and my own study. And then, yeah, I just ended up falling into retail. They wanted to fire me after 2 weeks, actually. I was completely useless. Seriously, how hard can it be to sell a pair of jeans? Like,
very hard, actually, to sell a pair of jeans to get the perfect fit.
Can I just say something funny on that? I had a boss and he was, this was one of his shining moments as a boss for me. I wanted to quit. Like, it was hard. This was after about 6 weeks. And I had a, you know, back in those days, if you could make a person cry, you were a good manager. So we had very different values back then. And so I was out the back and I was crying and he came out, the state manager, and he said, "You're a no one's nobody going nowhere fast." And when I say that on stage or in training rooms, people go, oh! And it's like, and I go, think about what I, how I prefaced that, that he was such a great leader in that moment because he cared enough about me to put the heat on to see me grow. And I think what's happened when I look, like I've trained, you know, over 100,000 people. I've probably stood in front of over 500,000. I've stopped counting. But the, if I look back on my career and if I had to say, what's one of the biggest things that we have lost? And that is the ability to internalize, the ability to stop and allow ourselves to receive, I can't stand the word feedback anymore, but to receive someone else's observation of us. You know, that I was 20. I would have left and gone back to my clerk's job. And he just pulled out everything he could to go, is this what you really want? So fascinating.
That is very fascinating. Mm. And it is such a culture shift, isn't it, today of where we've actually gone with leadership. And but sometimes those hard words at the time, they that would have been very impactful, especially as a 20-year-old hearing that. And I was just thinking back to, you know, certain things I remember leaders saying to me as well in the early stages of my career. But generally someone giving you that level of feedback is that drive and that push to get stronger. Sometimes hearing those harsh words is actually what's going to push you to be the best version of yourself.
You know what's funny? My mum used to say, you can't put a wise head on young shoulders.
Very good words of wisdom right
there. Yeah. And yes, my mum was very wise. Trust. So when you're young, we don't, you know, we had trust for our elders. We had trust for someone who was older than us. We would go, well, they know more. And so there was a thing around the police that, you know, we don't fear the police anymore. And fear precedes respect.
That's very true.
It's so interesting. And now, of course, because people have got they think it's wisdom, but it's not, it's just knowledge, at their fingertips. They can access knowledge. But, you know, back in, and I hate going back in my day, but when we were growing up, we had deep felt respect for the people that went before us and we trusted that they knew more than we do. And they do, they still do usually, but there's, and I, you know, I call it unconscious arrogance. And so because there is this access to knowledge now, you don't have to read 27 books to, you know, you can just Google or get onto Instagram and get life advice from a 12-year-old, you know. But we don't have that. And so when you lack trust, you don't receive the wisdom. And then as you get older, you look back and you go, huh, they were right. The amount of emails that I have received from people over the years saying, I know that, you know, when you said it to me, it hurt me greatly and I hated you for 5 years, but now I get it. I'm like, where does that get me?
Well, it's the, at least they're remembering that clearly some of those comments have actually had an impact. It's something that they truly have remembered. Yeah. And once again, it's that reflective time to then look back and you go, oh, well, in retrospect, that was spot on. That's exactly what I needed to hear at that time. It's removing the ego. But in the time, they've got the ego and they haven't got the experience yet to understand what that feedback actually was.
Yeah, it's sitting. I think I'm writing still researching it. It takes a long time to write a book. I remember when I had my first baby, I went, oh, I'm having 6 weeks off. I'll finish my book after the birth, you know, and then you realise that your life changes for 30 years. I'm writing a book.
I don't know how you even thought about writing a book when
I had no concept.
Baby.
I realised very shortly after. Called Perfect Storm. And it's quite fascinating to actually research the different generations. You know, I think the best thing that we can have in our life is the ability to, like you mentioned it so many times already, reflecting, and that deep discernment inside of us to go, to pull it in. Like I raised my kids with this, you know, I'd go, bring it in. Like Jackson, I remember him coming home from school one day going, I hate my math teacher, you know, the whole thing. You know, he was so mean to me and I'd go, bring it in. Like what was your part in that? And then they would pause and think about it and go, huh, yeah, I guess I did X, Y, Z, you know. So I try everything on for size, and sometimes I wish I could say to this younger generation, don't be frightened of that chemical reaction. Don't be frightened that, you know, growth hurts.
Yeah, it really does. Growth does hurt, and it is. It's getting out of your comfort zone. It's diving headfirst into the fear.
Taking it on, baby.
That's exactly it. So you've had this start, you've received your feedback, you hasn't been everything you anticipated diving into your career, but then all of a sudden you're embarking on this journey at 27, was it, that you started I'm going to start my own business.
And what was I thinking?
What were you thinking? I want to know why was this coming to fruition, and especially such an early age of your career journey?
Do you know, I think the wonderful thing about growing up in such a childhood is that I became a carer, you know, like I had that carer syndrome because, you know, when you, and also you're craving other people's acceptance of you. And so I'd lost my job. I remember Estee Lauder going for a trainer's job. So I'd already worked for 7 years in training roles. And the company that I'd worked for at the time, they had gone broke. Central Park, they were a ladies' fashion chain. I used to say, you'd say to the customer when they'd buy something, see you next week. And they'd look at you funny and I'd go, just wash it. You'd be back for a refund. It was such bad stock. But I had no other way to go. And Estee Lauder they declined my application. Because I didn't have enough cosmetic experience. I thought, God, if you could see me now, love. And so I had I was recruiting staff, and I had a couple of clients who said, can you come and train our staff? Because I had the experience of being a trainer at, you know, Jeans West, Just Jeans, Central Park. I'd written a few programs myself, and that was it. I just thought, I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I didn't believe I could do it. I just wanted to say yes to people.
And from your experience within training, what was it that you saw that was very different in retail? Because you made a huge impact on the retail landscape, especially in the decades after that. But what was the initial feeling that you had that you went, you know what, we do need to change these service models. We do need to bring more out of the teams that are in store connecting to the customers. That's the heartbeat of a brand, is that connection.
That's good. That's a good question. But at the, yeah, and you're right. Like, it blows my mind when I look at companies, and I, you know, people always get offended, and I go, if you get offended by anything that I say or anyone says, if it stings, let it stick. If it's true, let it be glue. If it's wrong, let it be gone. We can spend millions of dollars on shop fit outs and give our staff nothing when it comes to their own development. Or we keep it internal, and I've called that tribal development. And we think that because, you know, the person standing next to me teaches me that it's good development, but it's not. I think what I saw, I worked for a Japanese training company for a very short period of time, and that changed my life. Like, I was 24. It was in between a couple of the retail training gigs, and I did this 5-day live-in leadership program. This is back in the days when you, like personal growth wasn't even heard of. They literally just stripped me raw. And I was able to learn techniques, everything. I admired the trainers. I watched the facilitation of people. You know, I mean, it was pretty rough back in then because they'd break you open, you know. And so I thought, huh, I wonder if I took that into the retail trainings field. So I brought in the personal growth piece. And it wasn't until I met, because I remember meeting the head of innovation for Uniqlo, and he said to me, what's your secret sauce? Because he'd heard about my trainings. And it was so confronting. So instead of doing the whole sales pitch and the whole thing, I said to him, I don't know. And he said, Terry, I'm a scientist. So I need to know data.
Needs like, the facts.
Yeah. And what it did was it forced me then. So whatever you know, it's the old reticular activation system, you know, your RAS. Whatever you go looking for, usually it will come to you. You know, you put it out. So what do they say? You know, a thought puts it out there, electromagnetic, and then you bring it back to yourself, you know. You know, so whatever you focus on, your brain is going to attract it back to you. I wanted to know what was my secret sauce. Like, it's like having a great salesperson or a great leader, and you go, what is it you do? You ask them and they go, I don't know. Like, you ask so many retail managers now and you say, what makes you a great retail manager or what makes you a great salesperson? They go, I don't know. How do you train your staff? I say, I'll just watch me. I mean, that's psycho. So I was able to have a conversation with one of the heads of learning for Facebook. And I was talking about Nordstrom and how we got these incredible increases at Nordstrom. And he said to me, you know, it sounds like you've cracked the holy grail of training. And it was like magic coming out of his mouth. And he said, that's where you can intellectually, philosophically, and emotionally shift someone that they change their behavior willingly.
Mm.
And I went, oh my gosh. And so that, when I looked back on all the work that I'd done, they are the three components that I actually, without even knowing, it's been more intuitive. So I give systems, I talk to the like you talk about, you know, people want to raise their results, they want to move the needle. And I go, well, look at the person who's responsible for moving the needle. What's their self-awareness like? How do they handle rejection? What's the process for them handling rejection? Like a manager. Oh, anyway, I could go on forever here because there's so many layers to...
Oh, there is so many layers. Yeah. And there is a bit of a show that you need to be able to put on. Like, if I reflect back to my early stages of my retail journey, I was quite an introvert as a child. And when I stepped into starting to work at McDonald's and then over into retail afterwards, it very much was being able to have this courage to step on there with a smile at all times, because that energy actually portrays instantly to the customer. And it really is the teams in store at the face of the customer, that connection, that relationship you build in that first few minutes of really welcoming them into the store, that sense of belonging again, of actually they're comfortable, they're going to ask questions, you're there to help solve what they need. It's not a natural skill that just happens. It is a level of empathy. It is a level of acting. It is a level of actually identifying how you can make that person feel incredible, whether it be an outfit or whatever it is that they're actually purchasing to be able to take home. But you are able to help solve something in their day as well and have an impact.
That is very good. Because, you know, when you look at a human being, I think what a lot of companies do, and there's a lot that don't, of course, but there's a lot of companies that actually it's a condition. So the reason I'm greeting you, the reason I'm connecting with you is to sell something.
It's a step.
Yeah, it's a step. Yeah, it's very good. Step. I always say that. I always say greeting the customer is a biology. Like rapport is a biology. It's not a step. Even though we go step one, greet the customer. But you can't be empathic and be self-focused. The two can't coexist. And so when you can really pour yourself into another human being for no other reason, that you get the absolute privilege of standing before someone and just crossing paths with them. That to me is, and then the steps go, because the brain needs a system. And so I was speaking to someone recently and they said, oh, we've moved away from steps and we've gone into behaviours. And I didn't say anything because I felt, you know, you can't judge someone else's journey. I just know for me, I've done nearly 40 years in understanding how do you get a person to do something differently. Well, there's steps, the brain automatically systemizes everything. It puts, like, the way you drive your car, like when you get into your car, you have a routine. So the brain, in order for it to feel safe, has to systemize it. You fold your arms, you put your makeup on, like everything. Then you have inside the steps, you have skills. And so the skills are, how do I execute a greeting? What is a greeting? Like, people, we have no-nos. Like, this is more the sales side of it. And people will say, well, what are the yes-yeses? You know, like, because they're desperate to have, you know, something that says, how do I do this? And I go, that's you. That's the magic of you. And so we practice, of course, spontaneous greetings. And then, of course, the behavior is the outcome. You can't really train behaviors. You can witness a behavior and then coach the behavior. So, you know, my new company, Ignite Humans, that's what I love the most. We have four ecosystems. But, yeah, we have four areas that we focus on mainly. But it's fascinating. I find the human psyche to be incredible.
So this love just came out of, well, it's quite natural for you just in your journey of being able to go, I'm going to really focus on that. I'm going to empower people. I'm going to give
heal. It's healing. I think all of us need, all of us, every single one of us wants healing at some level or another. And I watched, like, I know what knowledge, information and wisdom did for me. I had this insatiable desire to find out why. Why was I the way that I was? Who am I? What's my effect on others and what's their effect on me? How does the environment, like, to be able to have that out of body experience and to be able to witness yourself in process, I think to me is just so powerful. Some people will call it God if they're religious. Others will call it, you know, if they're spiritual, it'll be like my higher, wiser self. And others will call it the frontal lobe if you're an atheist, you know. Got to cover all the bases there. But that out of body experience gives us that discernment of what's going on, so we don't have to become so, you know, caught up in ourselves. But yes, so when you teach people about being fascinated with other humans, and then whatever you're doing, whether you're doing retail, whether you're leading, whether you're in childcare, whether it doesn't matter what you're doing, then you can fall in love and become intoxicated, I think, by the magic of human beings.
Yeah, it's a very humbling experience when you can get to that mindset, isn't it? Just that natural feeling that comes through. It's about giving. It's about learning from each other. It's about embracing life.
Like, you're so right. It's a journey.
It is a journey. Mm. And you've got to go on that journey as well. What were some of the questions you asked yourself to really identify where you are with that healing?
Gee, you ask great questions. You're an amazing interviewer, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You know, there have been many times, I've had to start again many, many times. You know, I'm getting a bit emotional right now. And so I remember one other time I had to start again, and I remember someone saying to me, what's the best and the worst part about starting again? And I said, my memory. Because when you first start, I remember when I first started People in Progress, and, you know, I had married my husband, I had two little toddlers, and I would be the mother, and then I'd be up all night writing programs. And then it was the people sitting in front of me that would go, well, what about this and what about that? And they'd have all of these incredible questions, and I'd keep wanting to find the answers for them. And so they drove me to write better programs, and we grew together. You know, they were in the days of, like, Surf, Dive and Ski was my first client ever. Tom had three stores, I think, and then he said, if you can change Surf, Dive and Ski, I'll give you General Pants as a client. And then every brand you can think of, like, people put on their websites, you know, the brands they're working with. I went, oh, my God, if I put on my website all the brands I've worked with.
It'd be a showreel.
I think it's 400. You know? So it was always that desire to keep, you know, searching for the answers. But having to start again, I remember saying to my son, like, I remember one difficult time just recently, and he said, Mum, just think about all the people that you've influenced. And it's the emails that I get. It's the, you know, just when I feel like, why am I doing this? I've got this, you know, technology company, my second round at doing a technology company. And there are times I've got the most amazing CTO, David Raymond, and I was very fortunate, relationships like we were talking about before the podcast. He was introduced to me by this amazing woman called Paris Cutler, and she did some mentorship with me, and she introduced me to David. And David is really, I'd have to call him a learning engineer, you know, like, he's an engineer by trade, but he's an education engineer, and he's my CTO. And then we have this incredible development team in India, Hitesh and his amazing team. And so I'm surrounded now this time by some of the most brilliant human beings, and the days I want to give up, and I think we all go there, you know, or you think, am I still relevant or whatever, you just got to remember that one human being that said thank you for being you. You know, it's I don't think we do it. I've never done it for the money, and I've made a lot of money in my time. I don't do it for the money. The money's the reward at the end. That's why I always say to retailers, don't go in there to make Target. You don't get on a soccer field staring at the goal. You get on the soccer field to play the ball really well. And if you change lives in the process, then the till's usually full. So, yeah.
That's very powerful. And it's so very true. If you go in there completely focused on just the money, it's not, that's not going to be the outcome. That's not what you're doing. That's not the passion or the energy, because your energy is incredible. The way you come across and you can hold a room, it very much is about talking from the heart. It very much is about connection, relationships, and yeah, you know, it's a higher sense, isn't it?
Like, yeah, I just had this epiphany. So we've got all this AI, and we're bringing AI in as well. Like, we've got this most amazing coaching model. Like, our four, I'll just throw this in there, our four ecosystems, David would be proud of me, is we have a learning center, which is in-person, online, you know, because obviously you can't, if you've got 5,000 staff, like one of our clients has got 4,000 staff, you can't reach 4,000 people in person. And so, you know, we do the learning center. Then we have the coaching center, because what you learn then needs to be coached and deepened. And then from the coaching session, and all of it's in-person, online, and then from the coaching, we go to performance. How am I performing using the skills that I've learned? And then we see the gaps in the learning. So we have a creation center, building new programs and so forth. And so we've got, you know, we've got this amazing AI piece that we're bringing into the coaching sector. But you nailed it, because I think with AI and all of this technology, humans are just, and I'd love your insight into this, I think humans are becoming much more aware of fakeness. Like, I see stuff and I go, trust is going to be the new currency, I think. That human trust, like we now are desperate for a real human that has real intention, that cares deeply about us as a human, not just, you know, trying to sell us something or put money in the till or whatever. So I think the companies and the people, the leaders that really develop their, you know, not from a manipulative, I'm doing this to get a result, but from that deep, the more I know, the more I can grow my team, myself and everyone.
That's exactly right. And you can impact. You actually have a purpose. Mm. You are able to give. And sometimes you're never going to realize what you're actually giving. I think that's the beauty of it. Like, if someone, I reflect back on my Seafully days, and you know, we were looking at the service models, and we'd be out in the stores, and part of it was when I was talking with the teams out in the stores, is it's that sense of a woman that hasn't felt great putting on a swimsuit, but she's going on this family holiday with her babies and her husband or family members for the first time. Those photos and the memories made while wearing that swimsuit, that's what she's going to treasure. You're never going to know that, but that is the difference between being able to connect and understand her and make her feel amazing by finding her the right outfit that she has confidence to be herself. And that is going to impact herself, her children, her husband, and many more people in her life ongoing as she tells her stories from that occasion. So I think it is that ability to emphasize, and AI can help us evolve, and it can absolutely upskill the way we're now communicating, and it can help us get some of those tasks done. But there is still the human element that absolutely needs to be captured to bring it all together.
I think it's going to become, I think it will have its day. Like, I was, years ago, I was saying, where are the regulations around AI? Because I watched the whole, you know, even before Social Dilemma came out, that movie, I had already started Perfect Storm. And I remember showing my son, he was like, whoa, because they did it in the 7-year cycles. You know how we've talked about the 7-year cycles. But when you look at it, because I go, it's not just a philosophy. Like, you can't just have people feel, you know, having that beautiful intent with others. You have to have, I always say, The steps are the roadmap, the skills are how we drive the car, and the passenger is our customer or our team member, whoever we're serving. And that becomes that joyous journey together that we make it up. It unfolds as we go in. And so that's that beautiful connection. There's a beautiful saying. It's a Greek adage. It's appeared on a couple of movies. I first saw it on a movie years ago. But it is, the wisest of men plant seeds from which trees will grow that they may never sit in the shade of. And I think if we can just trust that, you know, whatever we do, we may never, you know, we may never actually get to realise the impact that we've had on others. And it may come long after we've gone. Who knows, you know?
I love that. Mm. That is,
it's beautiful, it's, isn't
so,
it?
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's so very true. Like, that's the legacy. It's more than the impact you're going to see and the ego that, you know, feeling it then and there and I want to be recognised. It's going to be far beyond that. But it's going to impact thousands more.
It's, you know, the ego. I love that you brought that up because it's amazing. This is why I love the stuff that I do. And also I've been the student of my own work, you know, but the 7-year cycles. Mm. And you really don't reach ego maturity. And this is going to offend everybody under this age because we all want to know, don't we? Like, I was the same. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I know everything. You know, I'm 20. 48 is usually when ego maturity comes about. And the 7-year cycles, 42, 49, I have to laugh at 42 because, you know, quite often I'll get phone calls from these beautiful humans that I've worked with for years and I'll go, oh my gosh, you know, I feel like my career's over. I feel like, and I go, how old are you? And they go, 42. And I go, oh, please, you've only just begun. Like, really? Yeah? Because you can't put, this is what blows my mind, is when people hire these young people, and it's happened to me. I've had people who, and forgive me, but they know very little. They might have, you know, got their degree or whatever it might be and had a little bit of experience. But when you're in your early 30s, you don't know a lot. Like, you might have all the passion in the world. And yet they make decisions for companies that will affect the trajectory of that business. So I go, be very careful. Oh, well, there you go. It's partners. You know, be very careful who you, because everyone in your team, everyone you hire, is really a partner in your business. And they're going to affect other people's impressions of it and, you know, I've had my experience with partners.
Yeah. And how, like, because it is, it's very, very true. And there is that need out there at the moment, isn't there, of really breaking down. You've got this new era that's coming through that have so much sophistication when it comes to the technology and that's using good. All the social media side. But there is the other side in every element of a business that is very much around the upskilling and the training and the failure that needs to happen to actually learn the lessons, to actually have mentors that have guided you and given you feedback and put you in situations that you are completely out of your comfort zone that you just don't get at that early, early stage of your career. It is part of the journey. That's why it is a journey.
That's good. It is so, you're so right. But you can't, you know, that's the hard thing. Because I think back to when I was younger and, you know, the things that I would say, I think like empathy, true empathy, not cognitive empathy. Everybody learns cognitive empathy. I can understand you must be upset right now. But people feel emotional empathy. They feel intuitive empathy. They'll sense, you know. Because that's why when we're 42, 42 is a hard age, 42 to 49, because when you've experienced all the emotions you're ever going to experience by the time you're at 42, 43. That's why I always say, be wary of the man that hasn't had a win at 42, 43, because they're very dangerous as leaders, you know. Okay, the hate mail, send it to Terry at terryhawkins.com. No, but when because we start to get disillusionment around those, that age, because of the fact that we go, what else now? What else is left? What more do I want? But 42 to 49 is about what's really important to me and where do I want to have my impact and so forth. So yeah, go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm in that phase of that.
How old are you?
That I've just turned 43.
Excellent. And beautiful age.
It's a beautiful age. Generally feel, you know, if you go back a few years ago, oh, I definitely thought about the imposter syndrome or, you know, this, or I've got to do more courses. It actually, no, like I don't get me wrong, I've done, you know, multiple courses and definitely had incredible mentors when it's come to imposter syndrome, but a lot of it is experience.
That is so funny. Got to do more courses. We think that's the answer, don't we?
We think that's the answer. it's the practice. It's like I wanted to launch a podcast and I'm like, oh, what do I need to do? I'm just going to launch a podcast and I'm going to do it. My first couple was probably not going to be the best, but we're going to keep going. And because I have a true passion for telling stories and I have a true passion for relationships and connecting with people and helping them tell their stories. So sometimes the life lessons and where I'm going with this phase of the next stage of my life, I'm very comfortable with knowing my strengths. I know what brings me great energy.
Yeah.
And I know what I can bring to a business. I actually know the value that I can actually bring to a business. And so I think going into that phase of life where you've had decades of experience before you, not just professionally, but personally, and building a personal strategy, as you mentioned earlier, part of those foundational years of finances, all the different things that are elements. It's not one or the other. You've got to have a balance of everything from your relationships to, yeah, your finances, to your mindset, to your health, to your family and friends. And it's an exciting era to go into because I think you actually have concept of how to balance that and how to bring that to fruition and be really transparent with yourself, the importance of different stages.
Well, and if you think about it too, like I've witnessed you in a few roles. And you are, I mean, you tick all the boxes from a CEO, C-suite level human, but you can't get there overnight. Like I always laugh at these people who call themselves CEOs and they've got two people working for them. I go, like, seriously? So the funny thing about me being in this new role is, well, new when I say, you know, Ignite Humans, is it's because of David and Hitesh. They have given me permission to be a leader. You know, they look to me for my guidance and my leadership, and I feel fantastic about that. There's no way in the world I call myself a CEO though, because it's like, you know, there's half a dozen of us. But I love the fact, like, you know, when you
you're a founder. The creativity of what you're bringing in, you are a CEO. You're very much a CEO.
Well, I don't have a C-suite. So what am I the CEO of? But
you're creating culture that not only impacts your business but also the many businesses out there so that they can connect their incredible product with brand fit to the consumer.
Mm. Well, you know, when you think of, like, when I, you know, ended – well, I didn't – you know, it's hard to go into the past, but having had People in Progress Global, which is the American company, luckily I never surrendered my People in Progress Pty Ltd here in Australia. So I can sort of say, you know, I've had that since 1989. But, you know, when I went down that journey with my former business partner, the conversation just rolls on. You know, we talked earlier about relationships, and I think choosing the right partner, you know, people will say to you, the most important decision you'll ever make is choosing the right partner. And I think we talk a lot about that personally, but we don't talk about that also in business.
Mm.
We rush into
very important.
Oh my gosh. You know, it changed the trajectory of my life. I look at my health issues that I got from it. And, you know, 5 years later, I end up with no company. And so, and way behind the eight ball. So at my age, it was a very, you know, I beat myself up a lot about the decision-making that I did, bringing him on as a business partner and so forth. So I just go, you know, you can do anything though, but so that core in my heart was, how can I get this content out? How can I have people having – I just walked into one of our Seeds, a client of ours. You know, Seed is part of Brand Bank. Now I feel like I've got all the children, you know, like all kind, Fine Day, Common Re, Unison, and, oh my gosh, I feel like I've missed one out. The gorgeous six brands of Brand Bank, MJ Bale, Mitre 10. Got to keep throwing out. Maybe Mulberry. But, yeah, they're all amazing. But I just walked into the Seed store. I didn't even realise there was one in the MLC Centre. So I just walked in, or wherever we are. I don't even know which part of town we're in. And I walked in, and it was one of the girls that I'd physically trained in the training room. And we were both like, oh, my God. And we were just both, you know, having this little bit of a squeal. And you look at, you know, the impact, because a lot of them can't have that access. So the fact that I actually started again and built a technology company, are you serious?
It's incredible. Can you actually talk us through how you did that? And, you know, not going into all the minor details of transitioning from one company to the other, but very much, you know, you did hit rock bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And it very much was a moment for you to go from a partnership where it has changed the trajectory of everything you've put your heart and soul into for two decades to now having to just take a moment to stop and completely rebuild. How did you internally work through that to, one, say I'm going to do it again, and second of all, to just keep going and to keep pushing through?
Yeah, it's an area, maybe that this could be another podcast. There were many dark moments, you know, and that's why I'm just grateful for my children, because they're the reason that I would force myself to wake up every morning, you know. Not that I would be doing anything stupid to myself, but I sometimes just wanted to go to sleep and not wake up, just from the exhaustion of life and the shock. I think I was shocked to think that there was a deep grieving of this thing that I had built. And there's a great line: the absence of alternatives clears the mind beautifully. I had no other way to go. Like, there was nothing else that all I have done is retail education. I mean, of course I've worked in other, you know, industries and so forth, but I have no idea. I knew I had to reach a bigger reach. I knew that I needed to get my work, and that was the problem. I think I didn't know what I didn't know. And so now, if there's any advice I could give to anyone, if you're thinking of getting into anything new, just research, research, research. Because we can all be swayed by people who can be fast talking, you know, romance us into making decisions with the, oh, this is good, with the concept of something. And my brain's just going, oh my God, what about this? Like, you know, with the concept of something much better. But we also downplay what we know. We downplay what we're good at. We downplay, you know, our own intrinsic ability. And so, like you, I learned how to, did all of my video recording. I had to learn lighting. I had to learn editing. I had the things I never dreamed I would be doing.
And how empowering was that?
Oh, let me tell you. It's so funny and I love it because I can go, right, oh, that's a green screen. I can see that straight away. They haven't positioned that properly. And so it allowed me to create on a shoestring. But I've also got two amazing, you know, partners, right? And they're not partners, but, you know, we're partners not on paper, David and Hitesh. And the three of us love learning. We know what can change when you have, and I was going to say information, but it's not information, when you have true learning, when it intrinsically gets into your cellular being, you know, the shift, look at the results. I always go, listen, there hasn't been a single client that we haven't got a double digit increase with. So that to me is just a given. But when you see people writing letters and, oh, my gosh, I had this and I had that, or, you know, I've promoted 10 leaders out of my business, you know, out of my store or my area, whatever it might be, that's when you know. I'm working with Brilliance and I feel very humbled to be with David and Hitesh and, you know, the things. It's sad, and people will say about money, like when you're a founder, you want money. And the first thing, I remember that was the crazy thing with the last experience. It was like obsession with getting, and I'm thinking, why? But we pour all the money back into building really great technology. But sometimes we just go, all right, settle down. You know, we don't have enough money for that. And so I'll be out there, you know, doing more programs to bring in more money to, you know, do something different. But I think comparison also kills you, because I'll go online sometimes and look at other companies that have education platforms and the millions and millions of dollars that they've raised. And I go, and then there's little us. And I go, what on earth were you thinking? But we're getting there, you know. It's people are enjoying it. And,
oh, and as you said, like, look at the brands that you have touched and evolved. Mm. Like, you're talking every leading brand here in Australia. And I don't know how long you've been in the US, but you've been over there, what, for 10
no,
plus
it's
years?
14 years.
Yeah. Mm. And so
I haven't had any impact in America, by the way, because I think America's very hard. I'll just be honest. You know, people go, oh, my God, you know, you're so successful. I go, the more you pull the curtains back, the more you see the truth. Like, I go, the devil's in the details. And the moment you start digging into detail with people, that's why I always think, you know, you can always tell it. And people throw this term around all the time, narcissist. And there's true, we're all narcissists at some point, you know. But when you get true narcissistic leadership, all you got to do is dig into the detail and just they unfold. I have not I'm not going to say success because I really haven't put my energy into it, but Americans, like I always say, if you're going to pay someone, you're not going to pay someone a living wage because retail is very poorly paid over there. You're certainly not going to pay for them to be developed from an education point of view. Australia, I think we have a, and I'm a citizen of both now, Australia, I think we have such a different perception of, well, the clients I work with, you know. But yeah, like I'm meeting someone tomorrow, no, not tomorrow, next week in Melbourne, and I met her at Jigsaw. So some of us will remember Jigsaw with Malcolm Webster. Oh my gosh, I just remember his name. So Malcolm had Jigsaw, David Lawrence, though. Oh my gosh, I could run off a million. She worked at Jigsaw first, then she brought me over. Her sister started T2. Oh, so her and her sister. So we did all of the foundational training for T2, Paolo Ralph Lauren, Oriton. I mean,
it's significant. Jalik. So I think you're being very humble with what you're saying as well. And I think that, you know, as I said, it's bigger, that this is the beginning of a lot of people's careers, that they've had that training from yourself, that it evolves well into the future self. Like they're then going to be able to coach and train and understand the importance of that throughout their whole career journey.
You know, they're coming around though. This is the problem. I trained them when they were 18. And like there's one guy, he's the sales manager at MJ Bale, and I trained him when he was 17 at Polo Ralph Lauren. And now he's, you know, leader at MJ Bale, and he's 35. And I said, oh, my God, if your kids now come, if, like if I get third generation, I'm going to have to stab myself in the eye with a pencil, I tell you.
Well, diving into your training, there was a couple of characters that you have created over the years that you haven't mentioned yet, but Pitman and Flipman. You'll have to give our audience a bit of an overview as to why these two characters came to fruition.
Well, Pit and Flip, I changed the man because I was speaking at a conference and they went, you can't say that because you're going to offend half the audience. I was like, oh my gosh, like seriously? Anyway, I think if people spent more time working out why they get offended rather than being offended, we might go a long way. So, but we've changed it to Pit and Flip. So Pit and Flip evolved because of my audiences. So I started actually with Flip, who was originally Stickman. So I would draw a Stickman. And I would start to, it all started with positive affirmation. I had someone from my past who actually said to me a couple of years ago, oh, you didn't come up with, you know, just disgusting, you know. So my little tip to everyone too is like, don't let anybody, it's in the detail. If you can track it back to where you started, it was positive affirmations to start with. And then my brain was like, but why? Why do positive affirmations work? And then I got intoxicated by the brain. I love the brain. And so Pit and Flip. Flipman is how do we repattern our brain? So everything that we do, every belief that we have, we're driven by our beliefs. So beliefs drive behaviours. That's the basic fact. Pit lives in the pit of misery. And so they're just two fun characters. They're very cute. They're now 3D animations. So now they actually have form. And so it's a very easy way. Even I recognise when I'm in the pit. So I'm not talking about true emotion. I think one of the things we don't do these days is we don't actually allow ourselves to sit in our true emotion. But pit is false emotion. So it's when we project onto others. We blame everything else. We have the drama story. Oh, why me? And so pit has, you know, pit posture, pit prattle, pit parties with his pit pals, you know, pit pistols where he sprays his pit poo, you know, like the whole thing. So it's very, very funny but very poignant. And then we have Flip, which is a 5-step process, see, say, feel, do, be. So, you know, it's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, take action, integrate. And, yeah, and so it's just a very simple, powerful way for people. So if I'm standing with a customer, let's say, or I've got a team member and I have a conflict or whatever it might be, I can easily go to the pit and blame the other person or whatever. But if I use my Flip process, I can actually turn the whole situation around and make it very powerful. So, yeah, they bleed into everything.
Yeah, and very visual your audience as well, where they, you know, they need visual is a key element of that. So bringing it to reality and actually even putting that character behind is going to help them be able to reflect on it the whole time.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what's funny? I just remembered Mick Tate was one of my first cartoonists. And I drew, like, because I write kids' books as well, and I drew all of the cartoons and, you know, the whole thing. I drew them as stick figures. And, oh, this is how, do you know what, sorry, I know we've probably gone on for 17 hours. I didn't know what Stickman back in those days looked like. Like I would just draw him. So I had a person call me and they said, look, I've got a conference. I've only got 14 people. I know I can't afford you, but what's your fee? And I said, well, where are you doing it? And they said, Manly. And I said, well, I'm living in Palm Beach. So that's, I can just drive there. And then I said, so I gave him half the fee. I charged him half the fee and gave him twice the time. Just because what a guy to have a conference of 14 people, yeah? And so I walk in and his wife had gone to Spotlight. Is Spotlight still around in Australia?
It is still around.
So she came up to me and she goes, Terry. She said, I found these little, they were like little alien figures. She said, I found these in Spotlight. And I thought, oh, I think this is what Stickman would look like. And I went, oh, hello. It's almost like I met him for the first time. So then we changed his form slightly and put a cape on him and, you know, but I remember Mick Tate, one of my cartoonists, and he turned him into a cartoon character. So it takes, it's all of us, you know. I just did a conference for the independent hardware group, you know, Mitre 10, Home Hardware, Thrifty, all those guys, on the Gold Coast last week, 2,000 people. I have never been in a crowd that have been so, their warmth and emotional generosity. It reminded me of what Australia truly is about, you know, the heart and the soul, and it was just beautiful. And I thought, you know, their theme was stronger together.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah, that's amazing.
We are stronger together. Look at this, yes. You and I. Like,
yeah, it's definitely.
Just, I need, you know, I remember thinking a few months back, I thought, gosh, I've got to start doing podcasts so I can put the word out about Ignite Humans now that we're stable and we've got some a great product to offer. And then I get a beautiful message from you and I was like, thanks, universe.
Oh, so. I love that. Stronger together. You're going to have to say on that note too of, I know you've been in back-to-back conferences while you've been here in Australia. What is that feeling like to explain to everyone? You have spoken on world stages everywhere. What is that feeling like walking out and just embracing that many people?
It's horrible. Like, I swear.
What do you do behind the scenes to be able to walk out on stage?
And you know what's interesting? You know, I'm personally coming into a new seven-year cycle myself. I hate the first few minutes, the first 10 or 15 minutes. It is terrifying. But what I realised, because I changed my content this time, I didn't do my normal pit and flip. Like, I know the jokes that get the laughs. I know the routines that, because pit and flip is such a favourite for everybody. But this time I did the retail journey and, you know, we think we know what customer service truly is like, but how do you take what you're already doing and then take it up a whole nother level where you can almost guarantee a bigger result, yeah? And I was nervous because it was serious content. And the feedback I got was great. But I realised, Terry, you have to let go of, you know, what, because again, it was that pleasing the audience. I wanted them to be happy and I didn't want them to waste 45 minutes of their time and of their life. It's scary. It really is scary. I don't necessarily like keynoting because I know it, I always call it like the one night stand, not that I would know, but the one night stand or, you know, that first date whereas.
You're trying to break the ice and get comfortable and, yeah.
There's all that judgment and then, you know, it's so funny afterwards. People will say, oh, you know, well, we've got our own system. And I just smile now. Like I used to really be hell-bent on trying to share with people the gap or where they could take their business. And now I just go, look, if you're not willing to go, you know, to take that leap up, like my own business, like my own self, my own journey, then you're fine. I think I mentioned it before. I started to talk about it before, unconscious arrogance. And I coined that phrase many years ago when I watch people who, this is my version of it. It's when people think they know, but they don't know, but they act as if they do know.
Yeah.
So you cannot penetrate that is such a hard shell for us to get rid of, you know, what don't I know? Like, how could I reframe this? How could I redo my business? And they're the heroes that I love, the companies that are willing to do that deep dive. Because it takes months. It's like any relationship.
Oh, absolutely, if not longer.
It's years.
Yeah, it is, really is the years. And it's consistently being able to layer it as well and keep building on it, not just a one hit, here we go, we're
exactly.
going to do one thing. It's an ongoing journey for everyone to build confidence.
You never, that consistent layering, that's beautifully said. Because people will say, oh, Like, I can't stand it when people say it was a good refresher for no other reason that it's the dumbest thing you can say to your brain. Because a refresher literally dictates, you're telling your brain to go looking for what you already know. And so when you keep looking for that new, like that polishing, growing, you just go deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Yeah, you really do.
It's so exciting. Like, I still love getting on the floor with customers and I still have to check myself. I'll go, oh, that was a 10-cent fine job.
Getting on the floor with customers is funny. That used to be my way to re-energize. I know if I'm sitting on the computer for far too long or I'm just going, oh, I don't know what to do, or the answer is like get in the car, get out to stores and just go look after customers.
That's why.
It is the best refresher and you will answer all your questions you're looking for in terms of trading the business.
That's it. That's why you're such a great leader. Like, I look at some CEOs and I go, you know, they'll complain about their business, whatever. And I think, you've never been on the shop floor. Like, they might walk in this, you know, you remember the old days, we call it the suits are coming. But they're never on the floor getting the visceral experience of what it's like for who they're serving. We sit in our marketing rooms or we sit in our product development rooms and we don't pause and go, get on the floor and know who your customer truly is.
That's right. Get out there and listen to the feedback that's coming through when they're trying on the outfits and, you know, when you're making those buying decisions for what you're going to put in placement for the next season. It's like, well, go and ask the store managers for their input for, you know, where they're missing sales and, you know, what the customers are actually looking for as well.
Oh, people want you to help them to help them. But that's why I love Mitre 10 because, you know, nothing like a gorgeous tradie.
I want to take a moment to introduce you to Naturally Gluten-Free, where lifestyle meets quality. Naturally Gluten-Free is a boutique bakery committed to crafting exceptional gluten-free products that are produced with high-quality, natural ingredients and free from all additives and preservatives. When you are seeking to transform your menu or source a premium gluten-free product, Naturally Gluten-Free invites you to connect with them via their website, naturallyglutenfree.com.au. And now, listen, you've also had two books that you have launched. I know you sound like you're working on another one that's going to be ongoing for you as you keep building that out, but you have launched two books in your time. How was that as a journey for you? Was that a personal journey, or was that about being able to give back to the community that you've helped develop over the years?
Do you know, nothing I ever do is that romantic. It's the two books are actually just two versions of the same book. So the first book that I wrote, There Are Only Two Times in Life, Now and Too Late, that was my first version. And I self-published that. And, I mean, I had someone help me. And again, you know, like, I didn't know what I was doing. So I got charged these ridiculous amounts of money and so forth. And then I ended up winning an award. Oh, so actually there's three iterations. And then I forget the second iteration, what that was called. I remember giving it to Miranda Kerr, the second version. Because I had done a mock quote and put her on the front cover. And then I saw her at the airport and her name was on the front. So I went up and I went, look, you know, anyway, she was beautiful. She was so lovely. She goes, yeah, use my name. But then, of course, I ended up with the author, Kenneth Blanchard, the author of One Minute Manager. He was beautiful to do the forward. But the final version is Why Wait to Be Great Now or Too Late. They made me change the title because of, you know, America and all this stuff. But, yeah, I won an award, a Rising Star Award, and then it got picked up by Berit Kohler, which is they publish books that change the world, which made me feel very special. But the reason I wrote the book was because my audiences kept asking me, do you have a book? And it was an MC, Matt Church, actually. He said to me, he's a speaker as well, but he said to me and a thought leader, he said, it's a sin that you don't have a book to give these people after your presentation. So I just literally took my speech and had that, what do they call it, transcribed. So if you want to write a book, it's don't get inside your head. Put yourself on a recording and then just have it transcribed. So I had that transcribed and then I started adding stories. So I had this gold box and I would literally write on post-it notes and throw it all into the gold box and then I hand wrote the whole book. And then I ended up with a book and then I put it through with Berit Kohler. They have these really strict copyright, it's not copy editing people. Oh my God, they're brutal. They're brutal. So you have to really park your ego. And again, like I said, you know, be willing to have some wiggle room and release what you think is right. and they made it, they polished it beautifully. But I'm just about to relaunch the audio version of it because they had this 85-year-old woman in England read it. And hello, should we have Pish and we have Flip? People go, who? Who's reading that?
You should probably scribe it yourself. I know that's probably a lot more time, but it would be a great connection point as well.
Oh, you mean read it? Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Because I did the original version. So now, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Well, Terry, your journey has definitely had its highs and lows, and I give you credit for standing here today, still evolving and building a company, which is just amazing and is going to have so much to be able to offer the retail landscape, bigger than the retail landscape, all businesses here across Australia. But what would be your words of wisdom that you would want to pass on to the next generation of leaders, founders of tomorrow? I'm sure you've got plenty of lessons to share.
You know, there's one thing that I trust now is my higher, wiser self. And words drop in, phrases drop in, guidance drops in, and now I actually pick it up. Know thyself. You know, I think the greatest thing, let you be the most fascinating discovery of your life. And I haven't done it yet, but I think my next journey will be to fall in love with myself. So the best advice I can give to people is start that journey first. Start that journey early. Learn to just see your most magical aspects and step outside and try and see in the eyes of others. My mum used to say, oh, to see ourselves as others see us. And that can work both for the positive and the negative. But a lot of the time we think about it as the negative. But yeah, know thyself, fall in love with yourself first.
That is beautiful. And I think what an evolution to be able to go on that journey. I'm sure that's a lot of questions. And we all need to ask ourselves a lot of questions as we continue to grow and ongoing, because who we are today is going to be very different to tomorrow. And, you know, to fall in love with yourself and where you're going with your trajectory, it's the biggest gift, and it's the meaning of life, isn't it? Yeah. It truly is. If you can be the best version of yourself, you have so much to give others, and to be in that place, that's living.
And to, you know, thank IHG, but we're stronger together.
That's exactly right.
You're adorable.
Great words of wisdom there. Honestly, can't thank you enough for sharing your journey, your expertise, and your incredible energy. You just have this unwavering commitment to empower others. Your positive impact resonates deeply, and we are truly honoured to have had you on the podcast today. So thank you very much. You have left us with lots of things to ponder on and to apply in our lives. Thank you, Terry.
And thank you for the light bulb moments too. You're adorable.
Thank you for joining us on this incredible odyssey. Until next time, lead with courage, lead with heart, and keep exploring the remarkable world of leadership. Enjoyed the journey? Hit the subscribe button, rate us, and leave a review if our stories ignited your leadership spirit. Your feedback fuels our odyssey.